Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the Classic Series Redrive. Check them up. Let's get started.
Welcome in to the Classic Series Redrive, episode number 90. Doesn't seem like it's been that many. I guess we're having fun doing it with number 90 here coming out. Holy cow, time flies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You make it home okay, Mark?
Yeah, we did. Mark Hostetler here in Michigan, and joined by, of course, Kyle Forsythe in Manan, Idaho, and Logan Reinhold at the Reinhold Tack and Western Wear Studios in Waterloo, Indiana. Yeah, we made it home last night from Arizona. A little bit different weather than out there. Man, what a fantastic 2 weeks we had out there in Arizona. The Western States Draft Horse Classic there in Queen Creek, and also in Buckeye, kind of a new show out there. Not a newer facility, but new show. And Enos, and there's a pretty big committee of them out there that put on the shows, and they just do a fantastic job, and they treat you well, and the shows are run good. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, each show had a meal, steak dinner, which was fantastic. The Queens Creek one, I mean, of course, this year is three, so they got, I mean, it's starting to get in a groove, good crowds, and it's just kind of that Santan Flats where they take you for dinner, just an unreal dinner, and yeah, just super stalls, super barns, nice wash racks. You don't need your water heater. The water coming out of the ground's about perfect temperature. And I mean, it's just, yeah, just all around, just super nice, super facility. The water trucks run pretty well full time. It can get a little dusty, dry and dustier in the desert, but the weather was perfect, like 75 and sunny every day in Queens Creek. And then Buckeye, the first day, I guess, was a little cooler, but man, it was a little storm kind of blew through, but it was about perfect show weather.
Yeah, you bet. There's a few times when the horses hardly sweat. You know, it was just about that perfect weather. And the shows start at 1 p.m. You're done by, you know, 4 or 5, and doesn't make for a long of days. And like Kyle said, and they've been really promoting it really hard, those two shows out there on social media and stuff. And the one at Queen Creek, by the Saturday show, they had a great crowd there on Saturday afternoon. And then for the Buckeye there, the first show, I mean, they're both kind of in Phoenix, kind of on the other side of city, and kind of different. Really, it's kind of, you know, it's not, what did it take us, an hour to get from one to the other, hour and a half maybe, but two kind of different vibes, I guess you could say. I mean, this Buckeye one's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, as where Queen Creek's more of in like a retirement, I would say kind of a more retirement neighborhood there a little bit. So a lot of older people came and watched the shows, but nonetheless, they're doing a fantastic job of promoting shows out west and draft horses out west in general.
When we first pulled into Buckeye, I don't think the facility really knew what to expect. And I think Enos got there the day before and he was like, oh no. And, I tell you what, they were super accommodating. I mean, you couldn't ask for, they were working hard. I mean, the facility worked hard and super accommodating. And, like the stalls where a lot of the horses were kind of pipe and, like a
mesh type. Mesh,
yeah. Between the horses, but there were 15 by 15 stalls too. So, I mean, you didn't really have to worry too much. The horses, I tell you what, I was a little scared when we first got there. Oh boy, these Belgians are going to tear this wire down and be in with each other or kick each other or get tangled up. And man, them things, they would lay down, stretch out and sleep. We had about 6 or 8 of them every morning, just stretched right out snoring.
Yep. No, it was great.
A little dusty, but.
Yep. Not bad. But anyway. No, they're doing a great job promoting the draft horses out west. That is for sure.
You got to give a lot of credit to the whole committee. Wayne and Harley, they do a great job helping keep the show run. And Jaron, first time announcing this year, he did a fantastic job. Shout out to him and Enos and Mark and Taylor and just that whole group that sit on those committees and put that shows, those shows together. Just kudos to them, and they're working really hard at it.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Upcoming shows, really kind of a little bit slower now. We have the Royal Manitoba Winter Fair coming up in Brandon, March 25th through the 30th. They offer a six-horse hitch championship class, pays out $6,000, and then they also have a classic cart there that pays out the minimum. So that's about all we got going on right now.
That's kind of my my hometown deal. I remember being a kid, that was – we worked all winter. We'd start kind of right after Christmas and start getting horses ready, and that was kind of the highlight of our show season. The Royal Manitoba Winter Fair. They used to get like 15, 18 sixes there. They had to turn hitches away some years. And it's slowed down a little bit, but there's still some good exhibitors out there in that area, and they're keeping it going. So that's good.
Yep, man. From what I've heard, that facility is pretty spectacular from what I hear.
Yeah, for sure. It's all one under one roof and hotels right there, and yeah, it's pretty cool. Any news with the Classic Series, Mark?
Just kind of the same old, you know, we're just looking for shows to get registered and, you know, get everybody signed up that needs to be signed up, and shows to report, get points reported. They've been doing a fantastic job over this winter as far as getting them turned in on time, and so that's always good. And no, just, you know, the Hall of Fame nominations close April 15th, and just kind of the same old stuff. Spark Plug Coffee, that's going again. That had been shut down there for a little while, and I guess Cassie put in a lot of time with the company and she got it back up going again. So if anybody got shut out from ordering Spark Plug Coffee here in the last month or 6 weeks, it's up and running again. And another thing, just if you can, maybe order some swag, order some merchandise online. You can just drive6.com and there's a order merchandise button and you just click on it and the store's right there. So go on and get some merchandise and wear it around and spread the word of the draft horse and the Classic Series in general.
Yeah, absolutely. Peak of sale, time this is out, that's going to be full swing. In fact, it's Monday today. I believe there's a tax sale cranking already at Topeka. So, yeah, we'll have some results from that. Sounds like there's going to be a lot of horses, a lot of good horses.
Oh, I'm sure the consignments will be good. They always have a strong Belgian consignment, and I'm sure there won't be any lacking in Bertrams. In fact, I've seen some pictures of some Clydes that are going too, and seems that Clyde sales picked up there a little bit in the last few years, and no doubt in my mind, they'll have a strong consignment again all the way through. But you're right, Kyle. I think it starts today with the equipment auction and some tack, and I think they might be selling crossbreds tonight already. So they'll be pumping through quite a few horses there this week.
Yeah. People are kind of full swing now, horse sales and foaling and breeding, and this kind of seems like when things get really serious.
Yep. This is an interesting episode. A few episodes ago, we had a roundtable discussion on, you know, in the ring judging a horse show on what they look for. So we kind of came out with a roundtable discussion sitting in Arizona one evening talking about what we had three drivers on, Travis Shaw, Tim Sparrow, and Wilbur Hellmuth, to discuss on what they like to see in a judge and how they like to have a see it, you know, to get a driver's perspective on how they like to see a judge a class. Some interesting thoughts and some interesting conversation here.
Yeah, this is going to cover a lot of things. We started off kind of sale horses and talking about, you know, what you look for in a sale horse and how that all goes. And then we kind of go into driving and as a driver, what you appreciate about judging. And we kind of covered a lot of topics and it's a lot of information there. All three of those guys, you know, you kind of have three different generations. Travis is just a tickle older than you and I and Tim. And then you have Tim, of course, and he's been showing at a high level for a long time. And Wilbur, who's been 2 or 3 years now of doing this as a profession. So kind of get a few different perspectives, and it is kind of cool. It's kind of cool to hear how they approach things. And yeah, I think it's a lot of useful information there for sure.
Yeah. We touched, like Kyle said, we touched a little bit about, you know, buying a sale horse, you know, and trying to make it fit in your bunch and how soon they can. And we also just touched a little bit about the Western States Draft Horse Classic, like the Western Tour, so-called, out there, all them shows out west now, and they just kind of touch base on what the committee does and things. And so, yeah, a few topics that we touched on and some informative stuff here, I think. And yeah, I think everybody will enjoy, and we'll guys see you guys down the road. The Redrive Podcast is supported by the Draft Horse Journal, the world's foremost heavy horse publication, now celebrating 60 years of quarterly releases since 1964. If you work, breed, exhibit, pull, log, trade, or simply admire heavy horses, the journal should be coming to your mailbox. Visit drafthorsejournal.com to subscribe today.
Sitting here in Buckeye, Arizona, we're joined by Mr. Wilbur Helmuth, currently of Grand Junction, Colorado.
Yeah, Palisades.
Palisades, Colorado, driver of the Clark Family Orchards Hitch. Grew up in
Iowa.
What part of Iowa?
Hazelden, Iowa.
Hazelden, Iowa.
Okay.
Or even just let him introduce himself.
Yeah. Why don't we just go around the table? Yeah, you guys introduce yourself. Go ahead, Wilbur.
I'm Wilbur Helmuth. I am the farm manager for Clark Family Orchard out of Palisade, Colorado. I've been there about 3 years now.
And where is that in Colorado?
It's about 10 miles east of Grand Junction.
And how many years, you say?
I've been there about going on 3 years now. Yeah.
We also have a couple repeats on the podcast. Mr. Tim Sparrow.
Tim Sparrow with Young Living Pertrons.
Tim sounds better than he looks. He was cooking bacon yesterday morning and got a little aggressive right out of the pan. His lips are burnt. Burnt to Chris.
And also, we're joined by Travis Shaw.
Yeah, Travis Shaw with Ames Pertron Farm. My wife and I manage the farm, and been there 17 years now, and this is an honor to be on the podcast. Yes. Yep, 2007.
Wasn't like Valentine's, like right in the middle of February, wasn't it?
Yep, right. Jim was hired on the same day I was, and Jim was hired in 2000 on Valentine's Day, and I was hired on 2007 on Valentine's Day. Yeah, I was born and raised in Southern California. My neighbors had some Belgians, and that's what started out showing Belgians in youth cart classes. And then went to work for Van Axel Belgians in Northern California and for 3.5 years, and they sold out. And I moved to the Midwest, spent a little time at Sparrow Farms, and was able to work with Nelson Schrock and Jim Westbrook then. And yeah, it's been a
the beach.
And if anybody hears any background noise, not to rub it in, we're sitting all here. Well, Tim doesn't wear shorts, but most of us have shorts on, and about 77 degrees in sunny Arizona today. We're sitting outside in the sun and having a good time here.
We're just going to kind of go around the table here, since we're out west here in these Western States Classic here. We're out here participating in these shows, and big thanks to Enos Yoder, and I know there's quite a few committee members that put on these shows out west. They've done a really good job rejuvenating shows and getting interest from hitches out west here. Just kind of go around the table and give a perspective of what your thoughts are and the current situation and everything out here out west in the show circuit.
Yeah, and just kind of to set the tone with that, it started off with Heber City, if I'm not mistaken, the weekend after Mona, and it was kind of done as a
to get an extra show in the West to put in conjunction with the Young Living show in Mona.
Yeah, I believe it started in 2015.
That was one of the first shows outside of Loveland and Denver that were kind of, you know, more of a point-based show and stuff like that, and that people were traveling to. And then so Heber kind of followed it to add another show. And then since then, there's now Grand Junction in that Dennis and Stacy put on along with Enos's help. That's in usually middle, end of May. And then the two Arizona shows to go along with that as well.
Four of them.
Part of the Western States,
four,
right?
Four that part of the Western States series, right?
Yeah.
Yep. One in the fall after Mona, Grand Junction in the spring, and then
these two in Arizona shows.
Go ahead and just touch on it and your guys' experiences and the positives that's brought to showing out here. Go ahead, Wilbur.
Yeah, so I've only, you know, clearly I haven't been at like when Heber first started, but I know Dennis and Stacy. They did the first show in, I think it was the fall of 2020 when Young Living show wasn't. So they did the Heber City, I believe, and then went to Grand Junction. And then it just then. But that was in the fall. And then I think the following year it started in May then. And now it just kept going from there. And I know Dennis and Stacy put in a lot of hours and a lot of hard work to try to make that show run smoothly.
When is that in May? Like,
I think it's like the 19th and the 20th of May, right around that area.
And like similar fairgrounds as to where we were at Queen Creek last week and Buckeye this week, kind of similar.
Yeah, it's kind of slim, similar. It might not be quite as nice as like the Queen Creek show was, but I say it's a fairly nice show. Yes.
Well, as a perspective of, you know, growing in the Midwest, up in the Midwest, you know, shows most of the time. We'd go to 5-6 shows a year as a kid, and you had to drive at most 3 hours. But when you live in the West, it's a little different. So anytime you can get shows out here, it's a definitely a bonus. And you know, having these four shows, and like Kyle said, you know, they started at Heber City to help bring people from the East to come to our show, and it's just kind of grown from there. You know, it's nice. It's not too often, honestly, that we drive one day to make it to a horse show when we live out here in Utah or Colorado or Idaho. And so anytime you get these other shows, it's great. You know, like this time of year, we don't get too many blizzards in Utah, at least in Mona. But on Friday and Saturday this last week, that was 60-mile-an-hour winds. Power was out, so not at the farm, but just north of the farm. So, you know, it's nice this time of year to get some horse shows in and break up the show season, so you're not having the show so hard and heavy to make the finals and accumulate points in the summer. So, you know, it's a you know, really got to throw your hat to Enos. He's kind of gets things, the ball rolling, but like the Clarks, Dennis and Stacy, and there's lots of other committee members. I think Mark Drummond is any committee member. That show, I think it showed the six the first time at this last show here, and you know, and you got to tip your hat to Ames Construction. They help with these two shows here in Arizona quite a bit because they have a division down here. So,
yes, we have a corporate office here in Phoenix, Arizona, and one of the owners, John Ames, he lives here full time in Scottsdale, and a couple other brothers have places down here, and they like to spend some time in the winter down here. So Butch and Ronnie, they all really enjoy coming down here for the winter and then having something to do and go watch a horse show. Butch really likes to support the draft horse industry. And when Enos came to us and wanted to start this show in Arizona 3 years ago, Butch did not hesitate. We'd love to support the Western shows. And what a great place to come. And the end of February, especially getting out of Minnesota. This year, we're very lucky. It's very nice in Minnesota comparison to what normally it is. But there's many years where it's still zero out. And this is just great weather. We're sitting around here in shorts and enjoying it.
So
we just came off a big sale. Gordyville was 2 weeks ago. Go around the table and just kind of discuss a little bit about your guys' approach when you go to a sale on how you manage that with both your owners and yourselves and what you're looking for and how you kind of stick handle purchasing a horse at a sale and if you prefer sale, private, whatever's best available, some of those type of things. Go ahead, Wilbur.
Yeah. So when I go to a horse sale, you know, I like to see a horse drives good, you know, go around the corner smoothly. I don't really like to see a horse bounce unless, you know, in Gordyville, you know, that ring is a little intimidating to a lot of horses. So, you know, if a horse is, you know, jacking around a little bit, I don't mind that I do, but it's not the biggest problem. And, I like to see a horse with a lot of front end and, you know, drive with a lot of motion too. And, that's kind of my opinion, I guess.
Does Dennis travel to the sale with you?
Yeah, Dennis, he always, there with me at the sales and, usually what we'll do after, all the horses drove, we, like to kind of get together and, we like to, you know, kind of write down what horses we like, you know, Dennis as well. And then we, try to go look at the horse where we think would, fit the best for what we're looking for at the time. And then, that makes kind of the final decision, I guess, if we are able to purchase the horse.
Have you made private purchases since you've been there, or have mostly been out of auctions?
No, we have, I think we bought about 4 or 5 horses privately, and we probably bought about the same at a horse sale. So yeah, I'd say about 50-50. And me personally, if I can, I kind of like buying a horse private and kind of go to the person who got the horse and just, you know, in my opinion, I like to just buy him private.
Do you travel, Wilbur, before the sale and try to go look at some of the horses that are going to the sale and watch them drive at home? Or is that something that you get time for?
No, I haven't really got much time to go and look at that many horses before the sales. And I think the main reason is because I'm there by myself at the farm and it's tough. Dennis and Stacy are going a lot out in California and it's tough to get someone to do the chores. And, you know, Denver is right before that, about a month before that. So it's kind of tough for me to get away and go look at the horse. For sure in the Midwest, you know. Got to go back there and mostly.
Well, it's like Wilbur said, it is tough to go out and look at them, but usually I try to see, especially Gordyville, or you see some private horses go out usually about the week after I get home from Denver and look at horses and get a little feel for what, you know, what they are at home. And you can kind of compare, they better, they worse, were they worse at the sale, were they better? Or, you know, some of them you see them and drive and boy, you're awfully impressed and you see it again at the sale and they impress you again. You know, I take a lot of credit into that because that setting in Gordyville, most of those horses are not used to. It's an indoor setting. There's lots of people, lots of other horses. And a lot of the horses that go through there don't have that experience. Like there's a horse that went through the sale last year that Travis has that he drove awesome at home and at the sale and didn't make a mistake at either place. And I don't know, it's just two times I've seen him drive, but I feel like you get a little bit of an advantage seeing him a time before the sale versus the time. I've bought a few, one of my one wheel horse. If I had seen him just drive at the sale, I probably wouldn't have bought him. He just said it was kind of intimidated by the setting, but it's a guessing game. I always equate it, like, you know, when I communicate with my bosses and stuff, I communicate it to, it's kind of like the draft. You know, you have certain things you're looking for, but you know, they might really impress you and everything goes really good at the sale time and you think you really got a first rounder, but you don't know until, honestly, 6 months to a year, really know what you got. And some, especially, it might even take longer than that if they're a three-year-old. But it just takes some time, and sometimes you're lucky and sometimes you're not. I mean, honestly, it's, we've all bought ones that we look back about 6 months later and think, why did we buy that horse? Or you get something that you found that was maybe a lower draft pick like a Brock Purdy, and he ends up being pretty good. I got a horse I drive in a swing, and no sale at Gordyville. Let me take him home for 30 days and didn't have to pay a lot of money for him, but he's definitely been a good horse for me.
Tim, I think we all know you put on a lot of rental car miles looking at horses before the sale right after Denver, don't we? And which, it's all right, but don't try to hide it.
I didn't try to hide it. I said I'd go look at them. I think this year after Denver, by the time I got home from Gordyville, I put on about 11,000 miles. That was, some of that was flying, but most of that was driving. But yeah, I don't know. I try to do my due diligence. I mean, I always think to myself, I'll be honest. Like, a lot of times you go look at a horse privately and kind of have your hopes up that, you know, maybe you're finding a diamond in the rough, or it's the, you know, a really great horse. But most of the time you're kind of let down just because maybe you were told by somebody this is, you know, a bell ringer, or you've heard things, but you never know until you go look. And this year I went and bought a horse privately before the sale. He went through Harrisburg and the Harrisburg sale, and which is kind of a hard timing for anybody showing at Denver, because it's, the sale is actually the day we move into Denver always. And so kind of some horses slipped through under the radar there a little bit. And I don't know, I haven't drove him yet, but just got him home at Gordyville time here. And then we left 2 days later. So, but I think it's a young, he's a 4-year-old. He's a promising horse. So, but yeah, I do put a lot of miles on.
Well, sometimes it's a little tricky too, because oftentimes a horse that might fit excellent in somebody's hitch, be it private or at a sale, might not always fit your hitch, or just from a styles perspective, you got to buy similar typed horses, or else you end up with a group of mismatched horses that don't look good together. So, I mean, I think that is one thing that most successful hitches have really pinned down, is they have a type of horse that they go after and they stick with that style. Travis, let's hear some of your thoughts.
For purchasing horses, I'd much rather purchase a horse privately. But it's so many of these horses, once somebody thinks they really got something, they just want to take it to a sale and hope it rings the bell. And sometimes it does, or it, sometimes they're disappointed. And I think going, looking at them at the farm before the sales, just like Tim, is a huge plus, because you get to see them in their natural environment. It's where they've been trained at. So often they go to the sale and they, you know, they may look better or may not. And it just helps so much to be able to see them at home. And sometimes in their natural environments, you can see what you don't like about them and take some notes. And then when you go back and see them at the sale and you're like, wow, what didn't I like about that one? And when you look at them, 100 horses before the sale, sometimes it's hard to remember them all, but the notes sure have helped me over the years. Definitely with the blacks. When I was looking at grays, there wasn't a lot of options, so it was pretty easy to keep track of them, but I have found shopping for grays is much harder. But private, just sometimes get a little better feel of the horse and who has them, and they kind of seem to be a little more upfront with you, because when they're selling that horse private, they're usually a little more willing to tell you everything about the horse. They sure don't want the horse coming back on them if there's anything wrong with them. But there's so many professional fitters now that do such an excellent job with the sale horses. A lot of these horses, I feel, when they go to the sales nowadays, it's probably about the best they're going to look some days. And am I going to be able to maintain that look? And you know, years ago, you used to be able to think, oh, I can make that horse a lot better, but you might be able to make them a little better nowadays, but nothing like a lot of these guys are doing that are professionally fitting these horses and then trying to get them to fit into your group. Like Kyle was saying earlier, to match your group, what style you're looking for and what your end goal is kind of the big picture.
We would like to thank Shipshewana Harness and Supply in Shipshewana, Indiana. Mr. Bob Schrock, if you're looking for products for the show ring or at the farm from A to Z, anything you need, horse nutrition, tack, you name it, make sure you check them out, ShipshewanaHarness.com. Follow them on Facebook or visit their shop in beautiful Shipshewana Amish country Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. and Saturday, 8 a.m. till 12 noon. Call Mr. Bob Schrock, 260-768-7254 for all your draft horse needs.
So let's touch on that a little bit, Travis, from what you just said, going and looking at them before. Let's say that instead of going a week before the sale, let's say you went and looked at it 3 or 4 weeks before the sale and the horse showed good potential but had some issues. He comes to the sale and is 100%. You know, sometimes people try to hide things. Sometimes people are upfront, like whether it's chiropractic work or whatever they did with the horse. Touch on that. Like, would you rather, obviously everybody would rather just come out and tell them what they did with the horse. But let's just talk about that. And would you rather them just leave him the way he was? Or would you rather work on that horse and be 100% at the sale? Or be maybe a little bit iffy in the corners or something and say, you know, you can maybe fix that. Just touch on that. Would you rather him be 100% or maybe not quite 100% and you try to fix him?
That's a very good question. I like to when, if you're at the farm a couple weeks before and you see a horse that's just not quite right, maybe not right in the corners, turning his head, and then he comes to the sale and he's 100%. If you can go talk to the person that is selling the horse, fitting the horse, and there you ask them, hey, what did you change? And you feel that they are honest about their answer. I mean, us guys that have been doing this for long enough, we know, have an idea what we have to do a lot of times for these problems and these issues. And if these guys are well represented and they want to keep their name, they're going to be honest with us. Because once we get home and we find something else, figure something else out, we all talk to each other. And we all know that if there's somebody out there that's not being honest with us, we all talk about it. So that just hurts their name. I feel a lot of these guys that are doing this professionally will tell you everything that they will do to these horses. And I feel a lot of them are very honest about it, which helps us. Because a lot of these guys, they want the horses to go out there and work for us. They just don't want the horse to... They just don't want to get money for the horse and then never see the horse again. They want us to use the horse because that gives them a good, represents them good as well because their horse has performed well for us. So helping us, telling us everything, you know, and how they started them. Some guys, you know, will tell you from the day they started them in harness, you know, just in a round pen, or other guys tell you how this horse has spent a year in the plow. And that gives us an idea of what kind of training they've had, what kind of upbringing, and gives us an idea if, you know, if they might have issues down the road. When you pick that, you know, 7-year-old gelding up at a sale and all of a sudden you've never even heard of this horse and he's been out in a plow hitch for 4 years, you know, that's pretty good chance, you know, you might be able to better this horse or, you know, because of the hard work that he's done, you might have some issues. But a lot of the guys I feel that are pretty honest nowadays that we deal with.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, Travis. I think, you know, I kind of the mindset of you're innocent until proven guilty. And I've never, you know, I've asked a lot of these guys who do it professionally. And, you know, I feel like they don't, when I ask, they don't hesitate. And sometimes they even tell you something before you even ask. You know, for instance, a guy at Gordyville, there was a horse that I thought, you know, had some athletic ability and talent, but he just kind of kept wanting to bounce and stuff. And I asked him and he said, no, he says, I think, you know, there's something that bothers him. I asked if it was in his head or, you know, it was physical. And he thought, you know, right away he said, I think it's physical. And, you definitely appreciate that, as a buyer. And, you know, it gives you a little bit of confidence that when there is that horse that is pretty exceptional and maybe you see something that they will tell you the truth. It definitely, does give you an advantage. And some of these guys are pretty good. You know, like Travis said, you have to look at it and assess and think, can I maintain, you know, you're going to maintain that. They perform at a level like they're going to mature and you just need to have them consistently perform like that. They're not really going to get a lot more out of them. You know, that's kind of a determining factor too. When you watch some of these horses, like some of these guys, if you watch a horse and think, oh, you know, he's all right. But you kind of look at the hands he's in and be like, well, if they're not getting, you know, he's lacking a little headset or whatever, you know, am I really going to be able to correct that? And kind of like Kyle said earlier, you know, you're also looking for a type of horse. And just because the horse doesn't type into your group doesn't mean you don't think it's not a good horse or isn't good enough to beat you. It just, they need to fit your type.
And I think a lot of what both of you were saying, Travis and Tim, is ask lots of questions. I think that's where a lot of people make a mistake at a sale is they go to a sale, watch a horse drive, purchase a horse without communicating with the people that have the horse there to be presented. They get the horse home and there might be some issues there. But if you don't go and communicate with that person that had the horse at the sale, you really have to blame yourself on that. I mean, I think most of the time you'll get lots of answers if you just go ask the questions. I think people want to be honest. They want to tell you everything. It's just a matter of making sure that you communicate really clearly and ask a lot of questions. Ask the history of vet work, the history of chiropractic work, the history of dental work, the history of all of those things, I think is very important to communicate with the person selling the horse at a sale. Talk a little bit about, guys, we'll just go around the table and just your approach when you go to a sale. I always think back, Nelson Schrock told me a long time ago, when you go to a sale, don't go looking for a lead horse or looking for a wheel horse or looking for a swing horse. Just buy the best horse. And if he's good enough, he will find a spot in your hitch somewhere. If he's one of your six best horses, you'll find a spot to put him in there. But that's not always the case. Just talk a little bit about that and just kind of the approach you guys take when you're at a sale. If you look for a specific type of horse for a certain spot in your hitch, or if it's to fill a need, fill a hole, or is it just buying the best horse and bring him home, letting him grow up, seeing what he turns into?
Yeah, so when I go to a horse sale, I mean, for me, maybe it's different for other people, but I like to go, and if we got a horse that needs to be replaced, I try to go to a horse sale and try to find a horse that will replace the horse I need to get that needs to be replaced. But if that horse, you know, if a horse ain't there that I think will not replace that horse, I try to go look for just say a big wheel horse or something like that. You can always, you know, use another spare wheel horse or just a horse that would make a good spare if there's not something there that you're really looking for, you know. But that's just my opinion, I guess. I'm sure you guys got different opinions too.
My spares always end up the ones that don't work out. This one I thought was going to be really good that didn't end up being quite so good. So, but anyhow, go ahead, Tim.
I feel like I probably would agree with your statement, Kyle, because there's been a few times maybe I have looked for a certain spot and maybe overlooked something, overlooked a horse that was probably maybe a little bit better, but it wasn't necessarily the spot that I was thought I needed to fill. But I think that's a good approach to have, really, honestly. You try and go there and get the best horse you can, best horse available for your budget. You gotta try to find the best horse available, I think, is because a lot of times these horses, even if they're 4-year-olds, A lot of times they grow a lot, it seems like. Even just getting weight on a horse seems like them makes them an inch bigger. And, you know, usually they surpass what you think your size you're getting. For instance, it's been 4 years ago now, the horse is driving the left lead. When I first looked at him, he was only three when I bought him, but he was like 17.2, and now shot up, he's right around 18.1. So, I mean, that's 3 inches of growth, and not every horse does that, but you want to see, probably just look for the best horse available, in my opinion.
Just to touch on that size thing, it's so hard. You know, you have a guy telling you to go look at a horse at a sale and, you know, seeing if, you know, you think go with this horse or how big is he? And, you know, he looks pretty good sized. And you come home, you know, beside these mature horses and you're like, man, was I off on that one? Like, you can chin them all you want and stick them all you want, but it's just such a big difference, it seems like, on those 3 and 4 year old younger horses. Now, Travis, just talk a little bit about, you know, how you go as far as buying and fitting in, or just best available, or what's your strategy?
Well, I kind of go off the Nelson Schrock strategy as well. If it's a great horse and would fit in your program, you'll find a spot for it. There's been times where I have been looking for just a wheel horse or a lead horse, and needing one of them more than anything else. Jim Westbrook always says, well, you're always looking for a wheel and a lead horse, and whatever else falls in between usually ends up being a swing horse. But there's been times where I was short a swing horse as well. it's just one of those things, you know, all the horses, you go look at horses and you're looking for a special one just to fit that spot, and it just never seems to work out that way. And some of the best horses for a certain position sometimes don't even turn out being the ones that you bought for that position. Maybe you had in mind that a horse was going to be a wheel horse and ended up getting some bigger ones. They work better in the swing or even with the lead horse. I've had some pretty good swing horses turn into lead horses when they were young and they were just immature. And they just learn that, grow that confidence in the swing. And when you ask them to be a lead horse, they just have the boldness to be a lead horse. But also when you're looking for, sometimes I found, you know, I just need a good solid horse. Maybe today, right now where I'm at in my situation, I don't need one to just, you know, be the world beater, but I just need to find a horse that's usable, that's going to be solid. Sometimes some of these real athletic horses sometimes are a little more challenging to work with. And sometimes you just would like a good solid horse to just go out and do his job, and you don't have to babysit him. And
you can never have too many of those.
Yeah. It's nice. You know, when you can go out in the ring and just sit back and drive and not have to worry about, any issue bouncing or cheating on the corners or trying to line up with on you. Those horses are always usually the good ones, because that's the only reason you keep using the son of a guns. But at the same time, they sometimes hurt you because you're just not solid and smooth like you'd like to be.
Just to go one step further, I know, Travis, you bought the gelding at Gordyville, and Wilbur, Dennis, and Stacy bought the mare there. Talk a little bit about trying to get him to fit in. And Tim, you said you had bought the one privately before the sale. Talk a little bit about fitting in, because if I'm not mistaken, Wilbur, you put that mare right in the swing at Buckeye last week. Challenging, practice at home, just going to wing it. Travis, I don't believe you used your horse, but I don't think Tim did either. I'm not 100% sure, but just go around there. Talk a little bit about what a challenge that is just to bring him from a sale or a private sale and stick him right into a show ring.
Well, and just to add that to Mark, just the approach that you take with your sale horse. If you cut their feet back, do you give them a break? Do you base it on the horse?
Yeah. So the mare we bought at Gordyville, you know, there ain't much time in between Gordyville and this show. It's only a week later, And I was really looking for a new swing horse. And for me personally, I really don't like, I like giving a horse at, you know, a month or two before I'll put him in the hitch. But this one, she's a 4-year-old. So I thought I'd give it a chance the first day and see what she does. And she went in there and actually was a rock star. But it's not like I would, you know, it's not like I like doing stuff like that. But I thought I'd take the chance on her, and she actually did really well. And after I got her home, I did reshoe her a little bit, cut her toe back a little bit, and it didn't seem to, you know, affect the emotion or nothing like that. But she went out and did really well for me. So I was really happy. But
was she 3 or?
She's 4. She's
did
a 4.
Use her all 3 days?
I used her all 3 days. Yep.
She held together.
Yeah, she held really together really well. Now I need to, you know, work on her headset. There's things I need to work a little bit, but no, she went in there and she never made a bounce that I know of. Was always right up in the bit and ready to go. So I was very pleased how she did.
Yeah, those are tough to come by. And I remember going over the stalls and look at her, and she was filled out nice too. You know, she wasn't like a skinny 3-year-old. She was filled out nice, and you know, those guys had some weight on her that prepped her. But yeah, that's far and few in between that, you know, you can do that. But, Tim, just what's your strategy on that?
Well, ideally you don't really want to have to do something, you know, right away, but you know, sometimes like Wilbur said, it's circumstances. I think he had a couple mares that are falling, you know, they're due to fall. And so, you know, sometimes you just have to do that, but ideally, especially even a 3-year old, especially a 3-year old, they're really not going to be physically mature enough to go most of them. You know, I think maybe a lead horse, you can work them in a little bit easier because they're out there out front instead of like a swing horse or a wheel horse in the back or the middle, where you really notice that, well, the horse in front of them it's got a lot more mass to them and they look a lot coltier. But, you know, it usually takes six months to a year before you really feel like they get to be mature. And sometimes what you struggle with too, when you bring home from a sale is, you know, I have never brought a horse home from Gordyville where they have not gotten sick. And part of maybe is just the altitude change and the trucking, but, you know, they generally, a lot of times they'll get a fever at least a day or two and come off feed. And, but you know, I always feel like, I said, that it takes that 6 months to a year. Some horses, sometimes circumstances are, they just are good enough that, well, they're ready to go in there. And, for instance, I brought him up before, the Royal Horse. They bought him as a 3-year-old, and it was the COVID year, and heck, we didn't know if we were going to show or not, but I hooked him a few times in a lead, and I thought, well, if we're not going to show but 5 shows all summer, I could probably get away with not overdoing it with him mentally or physically to use him. And we did. And you know, he did a good job for us. But I'd look back at pictures of him as a 3-year-old to what he is, was even as a 4-year-old. He looked like a 3-year-old up there. He was kind of colty. But it takes time. And you just have to be patient and keep training them. And you know, like I said, them up for success, too. You know, you take a, you know, for instance, like Travis's horse or whatever, everybody's at high expectations of the high selling horses at these sales, but you also have to be realistic. Yeah, they have lots of talent, but they're physically not mature as the rest of the horses, and mentally they're not mature. And you're trying to set the horse up for success. You don't want to throw them out there when they're not ready and they lay an egg, and you know, and then they get a reputation. Well, this horse isn't, you know, he isn't worth all the money that was paid for. Well, who's to say? You don't know until about 3 or 4 years down the road, you know, what they really, you know, how your investment really is going to turn out. You know, it doesn't matter how much you pay for them. You use that sucker for 10 years and do a lot of winning with them. Well, you figure out every time you won with them or showed with them how much it cost you, you probably would invest that money into them when they,
especially with their joints. Yeah. Bodies
aren't physically, no. But it's all on the case by case. Situations, you get in situations like Wilbur where you need to use the mare and she's physically mature and she's gonna have things that you can improve on her, but like you said, but you know, they needed to use her and she's healthy and she did a good job. So
The Smith family has been in the meat snack business since 1975. There are now four generations of Smiths working with Glenwood Snacks. Glenwood Beef Jerky is made with solid pieces of 100% premium beef and smoked with real wood smoke. Their jerky is in high protein, low in calories, and darn good to eat. Also, look out for new lines of meat sticks. Look for the Double S Belgians, the equine ambassadors of Glenwood Beef Jerky, at a show near you. Browse our many flavors of 100% beef jerky, signature meat sticks, and snack bundles at glenwoodsnacks.com. Follow on Facebook, Instagram, or by calling 208-624-9851. Orders over $50 ship for free. Glenwood Snacks.
Yeah, I think everybody, it all depends on your situation, how bad you need a horse, how soon, and where they've come from. Like Wilbur's horse was a four-year-old. Enos got a horse from Chad Cole, and he's using her. But that mare was an experienced mare. She's a veteran, so that mare there would be real easy to put right in the hitch. Last fall, I picked up a three-year-old, and we took him to Denver and Loveland, and we used him in a couple classes. He wasn't really ready mentally for it to go on the hitch. And we got out here to Arizona, and we decided that we really needed to try him more and use him. And the first day he was really good. The second day he wasn't nearly as good. And the third day he came out, just so we didn't try again. So on the mental part of it, a lot of these horses sometimes aren't just mentally ready for it. And the traveling, the stress that that they go through, and sometimes you don't even really realize how much some of these horses kind of just stress out. Just different fairgrounds, all the trucking, and you know, go off a feed. It just makes it difficult for some of these young horses.
Especially this time of year with the climate,
yeah.
Going from Minnesota to Arizona is definitely different.
Yeah, generally the last couple of years, I haven't brought my new purchases with me. I did this year. I just wanted to make sure I was watching them. But he's actually, even when we first got here to Arizona, I actually have two new horses on, and they kind of went off a feed and just kind of stressed out, and we didn't do anything with them. And already by Saturday last week, they were exercising in the morning. They were a handful. They were feeling good. But here it took them 5 days really to start feeling themselves. And if we would have been using them and would just been wearing them down, I don't think it would have helped them at all. I'd rather use a horse when they're feeling their best, physically and mentally. And when you're having to push a young horse like that, I think sometimes it's just too much. And at the same token, when everybody knows if you paid a lot of money for a horse, everybody's watching them. And I just assume them just go look at him in the stall, and they can wait till he's ready to come out. But I think it's still good just for these young horses. For many years, we really didn't use too many three-year-olds. We take them along with us and just put them in a class here or there, just to get them some ring time, the experience on the road. And that just helps a lot, because when it comes time to use them as a four-year-old, for us, it always seems like they're very solid and dependable.
Last year we bought a 3-year-old mare, and she was expensive, and at home she was probably our best horse. And we got to the first show with her in Grand Junction the first day. It was awful. I mean, she was scared of the bet. We actually drove the six the day before the show started, and I mean, she's really easy on herself, which is wonderful. Like, she travels easy. Every morning she eats her breakfast. She lays down and sleeps for about an hour. Like, just so easy on herself, which is awesome. Everything was great. Like, it was like, she drove great. Well, between the time we drove her before the show and the first class, they had hung banners along the rail. And I mean, she was so scared of those banners. Like, it was awful. Like, she was straight sideways staring at these banners. But as this, and obviously this year is a big year for us. We got our world show, and well, we made some other purchases too to add to our group, which helped. But I'm glad we used her last year. We didn't show as much last year. We went to five or six shows. But the experience she got, it seemed like every show we went to, she just got a little better and a little better. And we didn't overuse her. We tried to use her in just the six because we needed her for the six. But national show, maybe you get to a bigger show, you might use them a little bit more if the schedule allows it. And I'm glad we did, because this year it's becoming a little more automatic. And I think that's what you really have to find the balance on those young horses is they get broke usually. If they're a 3 year old at a sale, they get broke as a 2 year old in that summer or fall before they go to the sale, which puts a lot of stress on them. And then they get sale prepped hard for 3 or 4 or 5 months. And then we get them and you spend a bunch of money on them. You get them home and you're like, all right, let's go. You don't want to see that thing get a big break. And so it is a balancing act. I mean, you don't want to ruin them early in their show career either. You want them to last and you want them to be healthy. And sometimes I remember George, we bought him as a 3 year old and he was in the lead of the six, like right away. And I don't think, we showed him for, I believe it was 11 or 12 show seasons. He never missed the six horse hitch class. He went 11 or 12 seasons in a row where he never missed the class. So, I mean, sometimes it works out great and sometimes it just doesn't. It's just the way it goes. But let's get off the sale horse topic. Let's go on to judging. Obviously, we've all judge shows, we've shown under judges. What's some of the things that you really appreciate about a judge, and maybe what are some things that you wish didn't happen or you didn't experience with judges? It can be anything from length of class to drive offs to I mean, obviously everybody has a little different opinion when you're judging. If everybody had the same opinion, it wouldn't be very valuable to have one opinion judging every single show, because Tim would win every time. No, I'm just kidding. But just maybe touch on a few of those things and we'll kind of go around the table and have a little discussion about that.
Well, for me, honestly, I never judged in my life, but when I get judged, I like to see a judge that is fair and honest and places them like he sees them, you know, not when one horse is blowing and for me, if a horse is windy and it don't affect the horse, his performance, I don't necessarily think you should knock that horse for that. You know, he's trying real hard and he's just trying to do his job. And I like I said, to see a judge be honest and fair. And for me, I don't like to see a judge run the horses too hard. It just wears them out, and then you got class after that you would like to put them in, but they're worn out, and then they go in and don't perform very well. But and I like to see just like everybody else, you'd like to see power in your hitch and emotion, and I'm sure a judge likes to see the same thing. So, but that's just my opinion, I guess. Everybody else showed a lot more than me.
Do you have a preference where they stand at? Like, would you rather be in the middle of the ring or in a corner, or just you don't care where they stand at?
I don't like when a judge stands too close to the rail. I've seen some judges stand pretty close to the rail, and for me, when the horse goes by, they might see the person standing right, the judge standing beside the horse, and, you know, the swing and the wheel don't really see the person standing there, and all of a sudden they see him, then they might jump a little. So I like to see a judge stay off the rail a little bit more. I mean, if he wants to stand in the middle, wherever he wants, I don't care. For me, I don't like to see them, you know, standing right close to the rail.
And just to touch on this, I'm sure a lot of our listeners listen to the reason kind of why we're kind of doing this. We're doing this from a driver's perspective, I guess. We had the three on after out in Loveland in Denver there in Colorado. Some judges talking about judging, and this is just kind of more of a driver's perspective on what they'd like to see from a judge's standpoint when they're driving in the ring. rather than the other way when we talk with the judges before, what they like to see in a, from a driver's standpoint. So, Tim, go ahead.
Well, I'd I agree with a lot with Wilbur. You want to see the judge, you know, just go out there, judge how they see it. You know, trust your instincts. And I guess it's probably more so how I look at it is when I judge, I like to see, like, I kind of will look more across the ring. I think you get the whole picture of the group. I think when you get to be focused on the hits when they're going right beside you, it's hard to get the whole big picture. You maybe miss out on, you know, disuniformity, the, you know, they're driving together and a little bit, you know, motion you notice when you're up close, but there's a lot of other things I feel like you miss. And two, I would agree with Wilbur that driving, you know, drive the horse as long as you need, just long enough to make your decision. You know, if it gets to be a war of attrition, you know, pretty much you're just picking who doesn't make a mistake or their horses don't get quite as tired as the other one. I mean, yeah, and some people would say that's because they're in better shape. Well, you know, also too, we ask a lot of these big horses to perform at a high level. And so, like, kind of like Wilbur said, you know, if you have a horse that's breathing hard and is still performing, and is not losing his headset, not losing his performance, I wouldn't really, you know, worry too much about the noise versus a horse that, you know, has a, he's not making noise, but has a poor headset or doesn't have that much motion, or some horses, they might not be making any noise at all, and they do have a wind issue, and that's when you'll see it affect their performance. But all in all, I think a little bit sometimes in our, especially the six reworks, get to be a whole nother class all the time. And in some instances, I think it's necessary or it's useful. But, you know, this last show at Queen Creek, they did a good job. I think most of the time we did a lap and a half, two lap, you know, about two laps, whether we reversed or not. And, you know, that was necessary to make their decision, then that's great. But I think sometimes it's just almost just like a given. You have to have a rework. But sometimes I think you make it too complicated. Well, if this you thought was, that was by far the best hitch, then use them. Don't rework them. That, you know, the first drive isn't just a qualifier. Like, the first drive should count for something. And there's times it comes back. You know, you know, works out good for, say, it works out good for you, or sometimes it doesn't, to not to get reworked or to get reworked. So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, is just for a judge to trust his instincts and look at the big picture, not stand right close to the rail. You know, I had a horse when I first started at Young Living. I'm pretty sure if you stood close enough to the rail and I was surprised, he might reach out to shake your hand. And he wouldn't do it very softly either. So I think a little bit, honestly, as close as some of these guys get to the rail, some people get to the rail, it's a little bit of a safety thing too.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways for judges, I think, to approach it. Standing in the ring, since we're on that topic right now, I think I've seen it all. I've seen judges stand in the very backs of the corner, to see how close you can drive into the corners. I've always enjoyed when I can get close enough and make that judge almost climb up the rail. But at the same token, I don't think it's safe. I don't know what they're really looking for sometimes when they do want to do that. I think you can see the same thing. If you want to step towards the horses as they're coming down the rail, I know some people want to see if a horse is winging or not. That's fine. But then I see people that just stand so close the whole time. And I don't know what you're seeing when you're standing 5 feet from the hitch when they go by you. You're obviously too close to see if the headsets are matching, if the horses are working together. To me, you're just, what are you really seeing when you're standing so close to them? There's also judges that just stand in the middle of the ring the whole time and watch. And I don't disagree with that. I think you can see a lot from the middle of the ring, but I also kind of like to move around myself a little bit, see where the horses are coming at me a little bit, but I don't like to crowd the horses because I think that could be a disadvantage for some people if they have are kind of shying away from you. Just like Tim talked, some horses are not comfortable driving right up close to somebody. And I mean, I've even had a judge one time tell me, so, well, your lead horse backed out of it. I said, well, he was standing so close. He was kind of nervous. So what do you expect? You kind of did it to me, you know? But I do like a judge that kind of watches a majority of the ring. There's one gentleman that a lot of us know that you don't know where he's at. Randy Robertson, he's around the ring all the time. Like he never stops moving. Which is okay. I think it's kind of, it definitely keeps as a driver, keeps us on our toes. Cause you don't know where he's at most of the time. You don't know where he's watching. To me, he just exhausts me watching him. I remember one time Tim and I, when Tim was working for me, we were showing at Centerville, right? And Kevin Wilson was judging. And I don't remember what Kevin was thinking. I haven't seen him do this recently, but I think he was wanting to get a better look of our horses. So he started running next to us. And at first it scared the hell out of me because I thought something was broken. And I started slowing him down. I'm like, what's wrong, Tim? What's wrong? Because I thought he was trying to catch something or what. And then we realized he was doing it to everybody. Which I guess, you know, sometimes at home I've run next to the horses to see if I'm trying to look for something. So I haven't seen Kevin do that too much anymore. But I guess there's a lot of ways to do it.
Penwoods Equine Products is a family-owned and operated business that strives to support the growth, performance, and longevity of your equine family with our premium nutrition supplements. We make all of our products with locally sourced ingredients right here in the USA, so you can always be sure you're getting the highest quality. We've always been horse people. Our products were developed to take care of our own horses, and we continue to back our supplements with real-world horse owner experience. We're proud of the results, and we love sharing our generations of equine knowledge to help meet all of your horse's needs. We want to get to know you and your horses, and we're here to help with any questions you have. So reach out to us. You're part of the Penwoods family. You can visit us at penwoods.com, email us at info@penwoods.com, or follow us on social media.
One thing with panel judges, I noticed that Jason and Scott did a good job this last weekend when they did a panel judge. I'm not a big fan of a panel judge because a lot of times you get a pretty wide range of opinions, but I did notice that both of them were watching the same side. And that way, at least they both seen the same thing. If somebody had problems, they were both on the same page. I think that helps a lot when there's a panel judge out there to watch the same side, because I've been on panel judging before and we're all watching different sides of the ring and all our scorecards were completely different. And then to what I kind of like to see a judge do is, for one thing, to be consistent. You know, we all have prior, you know, what is more important to us. Some judges want to see the horses just work together really well, nice headsets. And then there's other judges that don't care how much they bounce off each other, how rammy they are. As long as they look exciting and have lots of animation, they don't care. But I think if you're going to call somebody out on something that you don't like, a windy horse, a horse breaking, or any situation, you just need to be consistent about it. You don't need to just put one person down for it and bury them and then go back and put another person in first place and that person had the exact same trouble. So I know there's no rule book or standards in our game where, you know, is a breaking horse worse than a horse that can't hold its head up is that horse, the horse that broke maybe, is far better, even with a little break, than that horse that couldn't even hold its head up or move. So there's different, there's so many variables in our game, and it's so subjective. It's tough. And as a judge, I think you just need to go out there and make your mind up. This is what's more important to me. And I want to see a consistent drive. I want to see headsets, or I want to see a nice moving group of horses all the way through. Some judges only want to see a good lead team, and they don't care about what's behind them. As long as the lead team leads them good and the back four are just okay, they're all right with that. But I think just being consistent is one of the biggest keys that I like to see in a judge.
All very good points by you guys. And I think more discussions need to be had of this driver and judge perspective. And as Travis did say, that there are so many variables that people look for. And I do think consistency is a valuable tool that needs to probably be used a little bit more. And to Wilbur's point about when, you know, we've been hearing that lately here a few times now on the podcast about, you know, when, and, you know, I think we all agree that some of our best horses who give it all they got, you know, they start breeding a little heavy, you know, just because they're giving it all they got. And it's not necessarily that they have a wind issue or a breathing issue. And I think we've been hearing that pretty consistently now here recently, and just interesting information, because I think we all remember, you know, a while ago when, you know, you pull into the lineup and some of those guys would just run up to your hitch right away and just listen for any little peep. And if you had anything making a little bit of noise, boom, you know, you were put down for it. So it's just kind of interesting to hear different people's perspectives on that. And Kyle or anybody else have anything else to add on that?
Well, I think that's part of the evolution of our industry a little bit. And there's been more research and studies. And I think we can all attest that wind issues are potentially here to stay in our draft horses. I mean, they're getting bred more athletic. We're asking more out of them. And most of them are getting tiebacks done. And a lot of horses are getting tiebacks and getting corrective surgeries done to help their wind. And as the veterinarians that we had on the podcast a few months ago both said, that the sound that the horse makes has zero influence on their exercise intolerance. So I think it needs to be less concerned about how the horse sounds and more concerned about how the horse looks. If the horse has a wind issue and is not getting enough air, they're going to have exercise intolerance, and they're not going to look good. And I think that's probably the key when it comes to wind, is judge more on how the horse looks rather than how the horse sounds, which I think is, as time's went on, I think we've just understand it better. And then to everybody's point, I think the key is, like you guys say, is consistency and also keeping perspective. There's no one thing that is so much more important than another thing. Soundness is important. Headsets are important. Togetherness is important. Motion is important. And I guess my thing is what, as a driver, what I strive to do is try to get everything so good that the judge has no reason to put you down below first. You know, that's what we strive for. And, you know, yeah, motion's important. Yes, headsets are important. Yes, togetherness is important. Intensity is important. You know, but if you can get it all perfect, then that you give the judge no reason to put you second. And unfortunately, all of us are trying the same thing. So, and that's what makes it fun. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, you're right. We're all trying for that. And like I always say, if it'd be easy, everybody do it. Try to do it. It's just not an easy game. But anything else anybody wants to add on any of the topics we talked about? Anything else you can think of?
You know, talking about the windy horses, and I'm just going to give this kind of an example. So if a person, you were having a 6-horse hitch and you had one horse making noise, and a judge wants to put you dead last because one horse made noise, that was 1 out of 6 horses. That's something different if you have one horse with a poor foot, or one horse with a bad hock, or one horse. So that's Well, that's one out of six of your players. So if you really factor that down, that's pretty small. So sometimes I think people will get focused on, I call it an easy out for Judge. You know, they look for something like that and they're like, oh, a horse is windy. Well, I'm putting them down. Well, that's just because you're not confident enough to know where to put them if that horse wasn't windy. And you're looking for an escape.
You're judging on the negative.
Yes. And you're judging on the negative.
Oh, yeah, I think I would agree with Travis that, you know, don't judge off one negative. Take the whole picture. Try to judge more off the positive of the group. If you get that one negative thing you can pick on all day long, and you get hung up on the one negative thing on a better hitch, and this other group that wasn't quite as good, wasn't quite as talented, didn't drive together, but they didn't have this one horse making noise. Well, as a group, which is better? Maybe judge off the positive, and as a judge, be consistent, I feel like, and trust your instincts. Don't overthink it. And most of the time, I think you make mistakes judging when you second guess yourself. You know, most of the time you'll see what you like and go with it. And as exhibitors, sometimes we have to keep perspective too. I think most guys are doing the best they can judging, and they don't see everything, or they have different, you know, they have different tastes than you do. But, you know, and it's not really judging, but one thing that for me as an exhibitor that I don't like is these shows that try to keep it confidential who is judging their show or a certain class. You know, as an exhibitor, we travel, we put a lot of work in, do a lot of traveling, and to come to this one show, I just feel like you're, out of respect to the exhibitors, you should be up front as a show to tell them who is judging your show.
So just to touch on that, now that we're keeping on going here, like when would you like to know who's judging your show? Like if you're planning on doing entries or trying to make out your show schedule, when would you like to know?
I mean, when you're doing entries, most of the time that'd be ideal. But you know, there's certain instances where you ask show management who's judging a certain this. Maybe it's like the Champion Six; they bring in a different judge versus the rest of the week, and they're pretty keep it pretty secretive even when you ask. There's certain instances that things happen, you know, that maybe you wouldn't have done if you had known who that judge was. Just, I mean, like whether you stay at their relative's place or something and you didn't have any idea they were judging. And, I had that happen last summer, but in all honesty, I mean, I probably would have stayed at a different place if I didn't know that. But I just feel like as a respect to the exhibitors, you know, like Mark asked when you're doing entries, it'd be great if you could put out there, you know, it's what we do is six weeks, 2 months before the show. Usually we're doing entries. Sometimes it's more than that. Try to be realistic. Two things change, but it just, I think as an exhibitor, it'd be nice to know who's judging you. And, you know, it might determine you might not go to that show because of who's judging. And you might go to a different show, but I just think, like I said, we put a lot of work and effort and energy into this. It'd be nice to know.
Well, I think most shows are probably going to pick a judge that they feel confident in and that is going to do an honest and good job. And I honestly don't feel like I would not go to a show based off of who is judging. I think, like I said before, you want to perform in such a way that the judge has no reason to put you anywhere but first. But realistically, obviously everybody has different tastes, and maybe if you're deciding between two shows, or obviously we all put a lot of travel in and you have to make some tough decisions on what shows you're going to sometimes. And sometimes those things are a factor, but we touched on a lot of things here, just the fantastic job that a lot of these Western shows have done and building. And I think the cool thing about showing horses, and I think just to bring it all back full circle, when competition creates competition, and I know sitting at the table with you guys all have made me a better trainer and a better horseman and a better competitor, just
based off showing against you consistently at different shows, I know that we have to have our stuff together if we want to be competitive at all, which I really appreciate. And I think that's important. And just the friendships you build in this industry. And we appreciate you guys getting on the podcast and just sharing some of your knowledge and information on everything from judging to sale horses to traveling to these shows out here. But any last words? We'll go around one last time, and here it is.
Yeah, you know, when I was growing up, all four of these guys I'm sitting with, you know, they're always kind of a idol to me. I always, you know, watch them, you know, show a lot. And, but yeah, it was fun getting to know these guys. And like Kyle said, you make a lot of friends by, because when I first started 3 years ago, you know, I knew who you guys were, but, you know, nobody really knew who I was. So I think it was, you know, it's kind of an honor to get to know all these drivers, and like Kyle said, you make a lot of new friends.
Like Kyle said, you know, competition makes you better. And I always say, if you want to be the best, you want to beat the best. You want to win by default. And it's, you know, sometimes you're disappointed with judging, sometimes you're not, and it's whatever. Like I said, I think most people genuinely try to do a good job, and at the end of the day, you just do the best you can. There's only certain things you can control. You need to focus on that, and it does, you know, showing with the level of competition that we do show at, I feel like keeps ascending on, and it makes you wonder where things can go from here, but makes you excited for the future, but also always try to enjoy it while you're in the moment as well. That's one thing I asked Jim when I got this job at Young Living, Jim Westbrook. He had shown horses for a long time, and I asked him what was the one thing he would do differently going back, and he said he would enjoy it more, whether it was, you know, he said obviously the victory. He said, you know, you'd win a class and you'd look forward to the next one instead of enjoying the moment. And because every win, no matter what show it is or wherever, you know, there was a lot of work put forth, and just try and enjoy the moment and have fun and enjoy keeping, you know, like my family, my wife and my kids are involved, and keep that in perspective too. There's lots of times you don't have a good day in the show ring, but or at home, you know, driving a training, prepping at home, but you know, your wife and kids are always there for you, and your other family. So,
yeah, talking about the sale horses and judging having your horses perform, and competition definitely challenges us to be the best trainers that we can be, but then also try to work on being the best people we can be. And when you're training horses and showing horses, it always does not bring out the best of us. I know I've made mistakes, said the wrong thing to the wrong people at the wrong time, and look back later and regret, and then have to go apologize for it. But like Tim says, you know, we got to enjoy this. We are, if we're getting to do this for a living, like the five of us are right here sitting at this table, we're doing this for a living. We're very blessed to be able to do that. We got owners that want to pay us to show their horses. And I know most of us put more pressure on ourselves than our owners ever would, because we want to be competitive. We want to be able to go out there and represent our owners well and work hard at it. And we do feel like, you know, this game has progressed so much. It feels like even in the last 5-10 years, it's just amazing. And all of us are asking more of our horses. Our training techniques are changing all the time to try to get the edge on each other. And it's a challenge. And at the end of the day, we have to remind ourselves that this is just a job. It is our passion. It's our job. But, you know, the most important thing in our lives is our families and our friends. And not to mess those relationships up because we get so wrapped up in our jobs. And if we were working a normal job, some days we'd probably just change jobs if when it gets difficult or look at a different path. But we're all so passionate about this. I think we'd all wouldn't do that. And I, you know, I do thank any of the guys that judge. It's not an easy job. I know I turn down a lot more judging jobs than I take because mainly of time. I want to spend more time with my family while my kids are still young. And there's not too many people that are happy with you at the end of judging. Usually the guy that gets the blue ribbon is the happiest. And you know, if you're a lot of us sitting here today, we know when you have a good go or a bad go. And sometimes we know exactly what we deserve, and it's, we know where we need to improve. And that's one thing about showing horses. It's always changing.
Yeah, very well said, Travis. And I think a lot of what we talked about here a few episodes ago with the judges, respect goes a long way in this industry. And that kind of comes from really this whole episode, respect to the people out west here putting on these shows, respect to the fitters and the sale managers and all that, and respect for each other and respect the judges. So a lot of very good points here, and been a blast sitting down with you guys. And I think that's about it. That's about all we got for you this time. And thanks a lot. Thanks again, guys, for coming on and spending some of your time here in sunny Arizona. And good luck to you guys this week here at the Buckeye Show.
Crystal Springs Stables, located in the heart of Amish country in Millersburg, Ohio. Specializing in stallion services, sales, and show fitting, a full line of equine repro equipment and supplies, reproduction seminars, equine reproduction services, including frozen semen collection and storage. Their stallion lineup this season includes Orndorff's Master Encore, Whispering Winds Cactus, Agristor's Diamond's Dream, Rossland Riley, Oak Haven's Illusion, and Dale's Stonecrest Bentley. Crystal Springs Stables, looking forward to partnering with you for success in the coming year. 330-231-2776. That's 330-231-2776. Contact Crystal Springs Stables for all your breeding needs.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you drop by our Reinhold Tack and Western Wear mailbag, podcast@naclassicseries.com. Once again, podcast@naclassicseries.com. Any questions or feedback you might have, we would love to hear from you. I hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great week, and we'll see you down the road.